And now for art affecting some other sensibilities. Throughout history, artists of many stripes have been hauled into courtrooms and accused of obscenity, blasphemy, adultery, and other crimes against public morality. Clay Wirestone is arts editor for the Concord Monitor. He wrote about a few infamous cases against creative works in the May issue of Mental Floss magazine. Clay, always great to have you.
It's great to be here. Let's wallow in some indecency for a little bit.
Let's do that. And we'll start with one of the longest trials against a work of art, the Indian writer Arundhati Roy. She wrote the Booker Prize winner, The God of Small Things. Now, it was a favorite book of mine, actually. It contained some scenes of incest and pedophilia, but that wasn't the reason the book was brought to court. What was it?
Well, the novel and the story behind the trial are a little bit complex. You know, the book focuses on a pair of twins grappling with social and familial unrest, takes place in multiple timelines. But the book had two things in particular that drove Roy's Indian critics crazy. It depicted an affair between members of different castes, you know, different levels of the social system in India, which was still really taboo in traditional parts of the country. And perhaps almost more importantly, it harshly criticized and kind of lampooned the Marxist government of her home state of Kerala. And the officials of that state were definitely not pleased with that. So in 1997, a local lawyer brought suit against Roy in Kerala, accusing her of quote-unquote, corrupting public morality, and the trial just dragged on and on. You know, there was no interest in actually convicting her because the book had been so critically acclaimed, but the government didn't want to drop it either. The judge in the case, according to Roy, every time there was a hearing, the judge in the case would get up and say, oh, this case gives me heartburn, let's push it off for a little longer, and it ended up being delayed for some 10 years.
Oh, boy.
Until a new judge came on the case and then threw out all of the charges against her.
The American artist J.S.G. Boggs, he made a career out of making whimsical currency art. Apparently that came to the attention of the Secret Service, which I guess for 2 years was raiding him, seizing his works. What were they after?
Well, it's hard to say because the Boggs bills, as they're known, you could never really confuse them with real money. You know, he'd have portraits of Harriet Tubman instead of old presidents, let's say, or he'd have a self-portrait on some of the money. He'd have typos, like instead of a $10 bill, he'd have a $10 bill, or say fun instead of USA. Some of his bills have the wrong U.S. Wrong government buildings on the reverses. But whatever the case, U.S. law apparently forbids color illustrations of currency unless you write non-negotiable across them in big letters, which he had not done. And so his work between 1990 and 1992, a bunch of Secret Service agents carted it away from his studio, from his office at Carnegie Mellon, from his home. And they didn't just take away his art. They also took away any objects that had pictures of money on them, like his underwear. And then what's shocking about all of this is that he was never actually charged with anything. He actually ended up suing the government himself to try to get his work back in Washington, D.C. District Court. But the judge just dismissed the case. So apparently our government is still sitting on a cache of money underwear.
Oh, he never got it back.
No.
Well, there are some very well-known cases of indecency on trial. Gustave Flaubert's Madame Bovary back in the day, or D.H. Lawrence's Lady Chatterley's Lover in more recent history. Now, you pull from history a much more obscure volume publicly burned in Massachusetts. What was this called?
Well, it was the spiffily titled The Meritorious Price of Our Redemption. It was actually the first book both banned and burned in the colonies, written in 1650 by a fur trader named William Pynchon. He was actually an ancestor of Thomas Pynchon, the author of Gravity's
right.
Rainbow and other books. It's a pretty dry read. I looked at it a little bit. It argues an obscure point of Puritan doctrine, but it was just enough to push the buttons of the Massachusetts General Court, which back in the 1600s wasn't just a legislature, but an actual court. And it ordered every copy of the book burned in Market Square in Boston and actually ordered Pynchon to show up and answer for it. He didn't really like what he saw when he showed up to testify because they really wanted him to publicly recant. He wasn't particularly interested in that. And, you know, seeing the piles of his books smoldering, he decided to go back to England, where he could write his religious pamphlets in peace.
Wow. I'm thinking about, you know, I remember Naked Lunch was on trial in Boston, Henry Miller's Tropic of Cancer. I mean, is this where Banned in Boston all started in the 17th century with William Pynchon?
It's arguably the beginning of the tradition. You know, you have the Puritans there who are some of the first settlers. And then in the early 1800s, you have a big influx of Irish Catholic settlers who were quite conservative, particularly in matters of sexual morality. So, you know, over the next century or so, the judges of Boston just became really known for banning works that offended their notions of public decency. You know, not just the ones you mentioned, but books by Upton Sinclair, William Faulkner, and H.G. Wells. It's not the liberal Taxachusetts that people talk about today.
Clay Wirestone was with us. He's arts editor for the Concord Monitor, and he wrote about Arts on Trial, some of the infamous trials of works of art through the ages. His article is going to be appearing in the May issue of Mental Floss magazine. Okay, art inciting outrage pretty much had its heyday in the 1980s. We had Andreas Serrano, of course, Robert Mapplethorpe, and Jello Biafra, lead singer of the Dead Kennedys, a punk band. What was he charged with?
Well, this is a wonderful story. A lawyer named Michael Guarino with the L.A. District Attorney's Office charged Biafra with obscenity. And this was over a 1985 Dead Kennedys album charmingly titled Frankenchrist. Now, inside the album, there was a piece of art by the Swiss surrealist H.R. Giger, who was known for doing the artwork for Aliens, the movie. And the piece is called, and this is all I'll say about it, the piece was titled Penis Landscape. And And Guarino got the attorney got a copy of the album, looked at the art, and thought, this is a really open and shut case of obscenity. And so he charged Biafra. Guarino kind of misjudged things, because Biafra ended up being really well-mannered and dressed in a suit and tie for the trial, and his lawyer actually really took the jury through the lyrics and artwork of the album in detail, explaining it as satire and the grand tradition of Jonathan Swift, and the jury deadlocked and the charges were thrown out. Postscript to this story is that some 20 years later, another public radio program, This American Life, brought Guarino and Biafra back together, and the two actually realized that this past confrontation notwithstanding, they had a lot in common, particularly politically. They chatted, and they ended up going out to lunch.
Wow, I'd love to hear the postscript on that lunch. Now, they resolved their differences, but do these cases against art more often than not fall through?
I think it's hard to say, you know, kind of globally for all time, but certainly recently, when you have this global marketplace and easy travel between countries, it becomes really difficult to make charges like this stick. And it makes countries look bad. You know, no one wants to be the big bad censor. I think if you look at the Roy case with the Indian writer, you know, why didn't she face harsher censure? Well, it's because the book had won the Booker Prize. I mean, it's because people like you had read the book. I mean, everyone knew about this novel. And it just wouldn't do to say that, oh, you know, we're going to throw you in prison for this. Mm. At least not if the country is interested in being part of the enlightened community of nations.
Well, all right, with just a little time left, how about this sort of no press is bad press idea? Do these cases help the popularity of their artists?
I think if they're smart and if they're interested in exploiting it, it sure can. Jello Biafra actually made a spoken word album about his experiences at the trial. And Gustave Flaubert, after winning his trial over Madame Bovary, had gained big publicity. The novel became a bestseller, and he ended up dedicating the book to his lawyer.
All right. Would-be artists, there's a lesson for you. Clay Wirestone, arts editor for the Concord Monitor. His article, Arts on Trial, will be in the May issue of Mental Floss magazine. Thanks so much for joining us. And that music is by the Dead Kennedys doing the Clash's song. Quite a difference from the band that we're going to be speaking to in just a minute. Perhaps the least cynical band you're ever likely to hear, Cloud Cult. They're playing a benefit in New Hampshire tonight, and we're going to be talking to band leader Craig Minowa when word of mouth continues. I want.